No, it's Just Plane Radio.
Yeah.
The show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
I can fly.
Tame it to the pilot, tame it to the tamer, tame it to the pilot.
Brought to you by JustPlaneRadio.com.
It's your lucky day.
Your aviation resource on the information super skyway.
You got a plane.
Call Just Plane Radio toll-free now at 888-884-2FLY.
And the sky's the limit.
That's 888-884-2359.
Sir, I'd like you to take the helm, please.
I'd be glad to. Greg, your co-pilot. That is me, along with Captain Dennis. We are your crew today as we navigate the latest aviation news and information here on Just Plane Radio. Ed and Keith. They've just been busy as can be. They're flying nonstop, but they have threatened to join us next week. We'll have to wait and see if that materializes. But just know they're still around. They've just been hot and heavy training new potential pilots to soar the Wild Blue Yonder, and been too busy for, doing things like this.
I thought it was just because they got enough of us at Sun and Fun that, the two of them together for 2 days was, they're at their limit.
Well, that very well could be the truth as well. Usually they're pretty honest and just say, yeah, we're sick of you. I'll see you in about a month. But I do think they're actually working this time. So we'll just go with that story for now. It bruises less to the ego. That said, Dennis and myself, we're more than capable. We can pull this off. We've done it. We flew over to Bimini, for goodness sakes, a couple weeks ago. And we made it back, right, to do the show. Yeah, sure, it was 50-50 at the time, but we're here, and we're going to navigate the latest aviation news and information. Catch you up on some drone news, or drone on about drones, as we sometimes like to do here at Just Plane Radio. That's coming up. Also, some news potentially or possibly from some people that we've talked to about a new autopilot system that you might incorporate into your plane at some point. Is that right, Dennis?
Yep, certainly looking at the options, and their product seems very, very compelling, especially because the Mooney is the next up on their certification plan.
Well, there you go. So. We're going to navigate through that a little bit later on in the show if things go as planned, but yeah, who knows? We might have to divert because, first up, we got to talk about the future of aviation. It is here, my friends. And, we've talked about all these different power plant options, whether it's, diesel-powered airplanes, which is kind of popular over in the UK, but electric. That's where everybody seems to be talking about doing a lot of stuff, especially, whether it's a drone type of contraption like the air taxis that we were talking about last week, or just a full-fledged electric airplane. And we haven't talked about that lately, but there is some new news on some efforts being done to convert regular piston-powered aircraft into electric flying vehicles. Is this right? Do I got it right?
You did get it right.
Who's doing this?
It's Harbor Air out of Vancouver. And what's interesting is they're not taking a new airframe. They're not designing a new plane. They're actually taking a 50-year-old proven airplane and converting it. They're going to take their de Havilland Beaver, the classic Canadian bush airplane.
Yeah.
And they're going to get rid of – they've converted theirs to turbines, but most of those are still flying behind radial engines as well. But they're going to take out the fossil fuel powered engine and replace it with a 750 horsepower electric motor and batteries. And their plan is for a 30-minute flight time with a 30-minute reserve, because it turns out Harbor Air's route structure is such that 70% of their flights are less than 30 minutes in length. So they don't need to have a 4-hour long flight time like you and I would need to have in the Mooney to go, to go somewhere. They just need 30 minutes and a little extra to be able to, pilot and hop from Vancouver to these various island communities throughout the Puget Sound and Seattle area.
The Havilland Beaver, is that a pretty big airplane? I don't know offhand.
Yeah, it's like a 6-7 passenger float plane, and they're really rugged, designed for the bush. They're fairly slow flying, but they're the kind of plane that you could basically load it up until the spreader bars hit the water and pretty much be able to take off and fly with it. They're just a truck.
Well, we've heard of a lot of things like the Sunflyer, which is basically electric from the ground up, but we haven't heard a lot about these conversions like this. So is this a new thing? I mean, I haven't heard of anybody taking, you know, a Hablum Beaver, and you were actually telling me before the show today that there's some guys that are looking to do a similar thing with like a Grand Caravan or something.
Yeah. Actually, Molokiki Airlines over in Hawaii is looking at doing the same thing with their airplanes, because it is costly per hour to, you know, maintain even a turboprop. So they're looking at this as from a cost-saving standpoint. We're not putting fuel into it. We're only having to charge batteries. We don't have all the spinning parts to maintain. We just have, you know, an electric motor, which has really one moving part.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, how hard did it, I mean, is this something that actually is within, like, within a year reach, or is this like pie in the sky stuff? What, tell me.
They aim to begin test flights later this year.
Later this year. Well, that, I love this idea. I mean, you know, obviously it has to work.
Right. We'll have real world data. I mean, you're going to have actual paying customers flying on these electric airplanes, you know, and they'll be able to actually, you know, measure how much money they're saving, how much maintenance is being reduced, how much quieter potentially it could be because you don't have a turboprop, you know, running up and down the Puget Sound anymore. Mm-hmm. It's an electric motor, so you just have some prop noise.
Well, who's making this this engine? Are they, like, putting this contraption together themselves, or has someone already make this electric engine?
They're working with a Redmond, Washington-based company called Magnix.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're partnering with them to put this thing together.
Okay. So you got that happening in Vancouver. With the Hablum Beaver, and then in Hawaii, they're looking to do something similar with, like, a Grand Caravan.
Mm-hmm.
And so you were telling me too that they would take the fuel, I don't know, the space that you use for fuel in the wings of the aircraft, and turn those into battery compartments or something.
Yep, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. On the Beaver is an interesting airplane. I mean, it does have wing tanks, but it also has fuel tanks down low in the belly. So it actually would be kind of a unique airplane to adapt because it does have a lot of compartments and spaces that you could, you know, basically put those battery packs into, where, you know, in a Cessna, you've, you know, got pretty limited space in the wings, and really you would have to take away from the passenger compartment in order to put enough batteries in to make it useful.
Hmm.
So it is kind of a unique airplane. It makes a lot of sense that they're looking at doing this.
Well,
it's just interesting that it's a 1950s, you know, aluminum airplane that's, you know, been field tested for many years and not some brand new, you know, all composite super thing, you know?
Well, yeah. And I would imagine that would make the certification process much quicker for the FAA, right? Because they're going to have to sign off on the power plant structure of how this thing is wired up, so to speak. But the aircraft, the airframe is, you know, has been proven to do what it's supposed to do for years and years. So that would be an interesting modification. I mean, would you ever consider doing something like that for your Mooney?
If they got the energy density up that, you know, it gave me a reasonable amount of range, sure, I'd consider it. But, you know, I don't think the Mooney wouldn't be suitable for for a 30-minute flight range. You know, that's not what that airplane was designed for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that airplane's designed for cross-country travel like we did.
Yes. Yeah, But
2-seat Cessna 150 or something like that for training, yeah, that might make a lot of sense.
Right. Well, you know, that's where the electric flying vehicles, the Sunflyer, they're going through for that training, you know, segment, at least initially, it looks like. And it becomes very effective for flight schools like flight training professionals. They've been looking at them and seeing if this might be, a path that they take in the future. Because the operational cost of these electric flying vehicles is pretty amazing. The trick, I know Ed and Keith have already always brought up with it, though, is switching out the batteries. You know, and
or being able to charge it fast enough
in
between flights. Because, you know, the turnaround time right now is mere minutes to have the fuel truck come over.
Right.
So, you know, you have to take that into account. And if your airplane's down half the day just recharging, that changes the economics quite a bit because now technically you would need twice as many airplanes to cover your flight schedule.
Mm-hmm. I don't understand why they can't seem to get the top of the wings and the aircraft made out of all solar panels, which, you know, they've done that on what, the Eclipse that, you know, flew around the world or whatever. But why, if they do that, like, say, on a Grand Caravan, and that should keep the charge up enough on those.
There's just not enough energy density.
Not enough sun. Not even in Hawaii?
The solar cells aren't strong enough to convert. They can't grab enough energy in the limited amount of space there is to be really useful.
Hmm. we need some kind of genius to come up and solve this problem. And then, you know, we could fly on the sun.
But as we start to do more of this stuff, there's going to be more development resources put into it. I mean, the auto industry is really what's driving a lot of this because of the electric cars like Tesla. And so as battery densities and things increase, we'll start to see those paying dividends as well.
It's the future. It's already here, actually, or, you know, just months away. So who knows? We'll have to wait and see. It's fun to be alive at this time in your life, isn't it? You see all this stuff developing, kind of gets you all excited and warm and fuzzy inside. Okay, that's probably just me. Anyway, we'll get into some other stuff like droning on about drones next on Just Plain Radio.
Just Plain Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
Imagine traveling twice as fast as you can drive. Imagine taking friends and family snorkeling, surfing, skiing, shopping, and more to exotic destinations. Imagine attending business meetings in cities far away and still making it home at night. Or just imagine exploring the wild blue yonder.
Quit dreaming about it and get to it. There has never been a better time to become a private pilot, and flight training professionals in Orlando will show you how. Flight Training Professionals in Orlando is your full-service flight school. A state-of-the-art flight simulator, a fleet of the latest Cessna aircraft, and a staff of full-time seasoned flight instructors are just a few of the many reasons Flight Training Professionals in Orlando is the place to start your aviation adventure. Call 407-896-0077. That's 407-896-0077. Or go to ftpros.com. That's ftpros.com.
Whether you're a flight student, an experienced pilot, or simply an aviation enthusiast, there is a place for you as a member of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. Join AOPA to get the latest general aviation news, safety resources, and technical support you need to sharpen your skills and become a central part of the nation's vibrant general aviation community. Learn more about becoming a member at AOPA.org. That's AOPA.org.
Be an explorer in the other two-thirds of your world. Be the buddy who takes the kids in the aquarium instead of just to it. Be adventurous. Be amazed. Be a diver.
Takeoff with Just Plain Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
Colonel, with all due respect, that new jet is a death trap.
It's the 1950s. Everything's a death trap. Now have three martinis, a pack of smokes, and get in that plane.
This is Just Plain Radio. Greg, your co-pilot. That's me, along with Captain Dennis. We're your crew as we navigate the latest aviation news and information, and then talk about a bunch of things like drones and stuff, too. It has been a while since we've droned on about drones, so we're overdue, and we got a few stories that kind of cover that base well today on the big show. First up, we're going to go to Paris. Is this right?
Yeah, drones are actually starting to prove their value. They're no longer just being used for fun to chase your cat or deliver a beer to the neighbors. That's something that, you know, we're not encouraging, of course,
right.
but there's actually real practical uses. You know, there was very tragic, the Notre Dame Cathedral fire in Paris recently, and it turns out the firefighters actually wound up pressing a couple of different drones into service to help identify where the flames were so that they could get their fire hoses aimed in the right places in order to knock that fire down and save the two bell towers.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, it was interesting to hear about that, actually. They had to keep some of them away. They wanted to just film it. But yeah, then you heard these reports that the fire department there, or the firefighters, were using drones to help guide, you know, their attack on the fire.
Yeah, it turned out that the fire department, it wasn't actually their drones. It was from, you know, a couple of other government agencies that that jumped in and helped them with the stuff that they were using for mapping projects and other things. So it wasn't, you know, it was firefighting specific with infrared sensors or anything like that, but still proved very, very valuable to those teams to be able to pinpoint where they needed to concentrate their efforts. And
yeah. Well, you know, you see drones being used in fire, you know, wildfires all over the country now. So they're definitely, you know, law enforcement or firefighting in general. I mean, this is a pretty good use of drone technology to kind of get a, you know, a better grasp on how to attack these things. So, you know, at some point they're going to figure out how to have water coming out of them. But then you got the whole problem of like, well,
how much do you bring with you?
Yeah, it won't fly.
Pull a hose up, and
we're going to just watch it burn. That's all we can do right now. But you know, maybe eventually they'll figure out how to make the drones actual flying fighters. You know,
okay, so here's our next $1 million idea. Take the fire hose and attach it to a big enough drone, and you actually make the electricity off of the water as it's flowing through. You put a little micro turbine in there. There we go.
Okay, Mr. Star Trek.
Send your checks to send your checks to Captain Dennis, care of Just Plain Radio.
It's science. Yeah, I don't know if it is or not. That sounds like pie in the sky stuff again. But anyway, one can dream, and we'll have to wait and see how that unfolds. But it's good stuff to see drones being used that way. Another thing, what this is in Uganda, is that right?
No, Rwanda and Ghana.
Okay. All right. So they're there, and they have used drones. How?
Well, we reported on this a few months back about a company called Zipline that was pioneering blood delivery throughout Rwanda. Well, they just recently launched service in neighboring country of Ghana. They set up 4 different distribution sites, and they'll be delivering blood products, vaccines, and other critical medications throughout the country via drone.
Okay, well, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, you got a lot of crazy terrain that they got to traverse, and going in a car just doesn't make hardly any sense at all, let alone if there's roads that'll get you there. So that makes a lot of sense.
They don't have the network that we have here in the United States that, you know, a road is even an option. So they're able to launch these packages to, I think they said they're covering like 1,200 or 2,000 healthcare facilities from 4 different distribution centers.
Well,
and they're planning for 600 flights a day.
Well, that's a lot of deliveries of blood. But hey, you know, God bless them. I mean, they don't need roads. They just got the drones now to make the deliveries. Now, not to be left behind, we do have plenty of roads here in the U.S., but unfortunately, we don't have enough of them, and we still have the same problem here. And there is a company in North Carolina, well, a hospital there, that is using drones and pioneering a new medical program there to deliver blood. And according to the headline, it says urine samples too.
Now are they collecting the urine samples by drone? Because hitting the moving target might be a bit tough.
I'll tell you what, that would be fun. Maybe, you know, could be a bit of a mess, but yeah, I'm not sure exactly what's going on there. But, you know, you have to wait for them to do their tests on your urine sample and that kind of thing. That would be kind of interesting. And you could streamline the process, emphasis on stream. If you could, like, okay, you got to aim for this little circle or something, turn it into like a carnival game, and then it just zips right off and does its little test at the hospital, and then comes back like, hey, you're good to go, or, you know, comes back and says, no, sorry, you're going to need to do something about that. We're going to have to give you something to clear that little thing, that little rash up. I don't know what it is, but that's an interesting use of drone technology. The blood thing, one thing I didn't, you know. It, like I said, it's funny. When you look at the headline, it mentions urine samples. And then when you get to the story, they kind of just, they don't mention it anymore. So I'm starting to wonder if the guy who wanted to get our attention, like, hey, this will make those guys at Just Plain Radio pay attention.
Look, it's clickbait.
Right. But, you know, that would make sense. And it would make things more efficient. And hospitals putting drone technology to work like this, I think, would make, you know, it'd speed up the process.
And it might make it easier to get it shipped off. Because, I mean, a lot of these hospitals and clinics that are doing the sample collections, they don't have the facilities to process it there. They send it to a central labs. And so
right.
They have to have couriers that are collecting these packages and getting them to an airport somewhere, putting them on a small twin engine airplane and flying them to some other city to the lab to be processed. Mm-hmm. So if you could eliminate the courier service and just deliver it right straight to the airport, that, you know, make it a lot more efficient. And
well, I agree. And once they get the drones programmed properly, the next phase would be adapting the drones themselves to collection facility or, you know, contraptions.
Yeah, just send them right through the men's room at happy hour, and you know, you save the whole problem of having to go and make an appointment to go and, you know, deliver your sample.
Yeah, it'd be like, sit on this, take care of business. It's going to fly away magically. there are so many images in my mind right now that are really, really disturbing, but
yeah.
Could potentially be the future. You think?
Well, I think we've seen a lot of that. I mean, you know, certainly the sci-fi shows have had different versions of that. I mean, I remember a scene in The Island where, you know, he wakes up and it's telling him, oh, you need to take more of this and less of that, and you need to cut back on your carbs. So, yeah, it's probably not that far off.
Yeah, but collecting those samples is always a pain and, you know, sometimes awkward if you just did that and then it just took it away. I don't care what we do. Just take it away as far as possible. There's a lot of applications there. It could come in. It could be pretty effective. I'm just saying. More coming up. Stay close to Just Plain Radio.
Just Plain Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
I've been up around the stratosphere at 31,000 feet. I'm gonna fly on out of here on wings that you can't see. If you're gonna fly high without fear, you're gonna have to learn to love the atmosphere. And you gotta learn to use those wings you can't see.
This is Just Plain Radio. Greg, a co-pilot. That's me, along with Captain Dennis. All right, so coming up in June, I think it's June 8th and 9th.
June 7th through the 9th.
Oh, 7th. So it's Friday through Sunday here in Orlando, where we're based out of for Just Plain Radio. We have the, what's it called? The Sim what?
Flight Sim Expo 2019. It'll be at the Renaissance Orlando at SeaWorld.
Okay. So Shamu is going to be hawking flight simulators or debuting what's the latest and greatest in flight sim technology, I guess, right?
Yeah, because it's getting to the point now where almost anybody can have a flight simulator.
But I have one. I haven't used lately.
Haven't used an airplane lately. Well, except for riding in the right seat.
I used yours. Yours counts. So, come on. Give me credit where credit is due. You know, when I don't get any credit, I understand. But when I actually achieve it, let's not forget it. Okay, Dennis? Come on now.
All right.
I'm
sorry.
I use X-Plane. And I think there's like, X-Plane 12 or something now? I think I have 11 or whatever. It's a couple years old now, but they're going to be there. But all the flight simulator technology folks are going to be there displaying their wares and that kind of thing. And you can come to this event and learn about it, the latest and greatest. What do you think? Do flight simulators really make a difference? Do you use them yourself, Dennis, much?
I do occasionally. I'll go up to the airport and use theirs to log the time, because the one I've built here for home isn't certified, so I can't actually log any time in it.
Right.
But the FAA is confident enough in them that, you know, as long as you're flying an advanced aviation training device, you can use that for your instrument currency now. So you can go out and do your six approaches and your holding in the sim to stay current.
Okay. So well, there's that. But even just doing it to kind of stay up and fresh and try to have some fun with it, you know, shoot some approaches and things like that, I think is just a good plan of attack, even if it's something as simple as X-Plane, which, by the way, isn't that simple? It's not.
X-Plane's used by a lot of companies to actually test their prototypes and designs.
I got a bunch of that stuff. I just got to put it in action, so to speak. Maybe I'll have to head over to the Flight Sim Expo and flightsimexpo.com. Check it out. We got more coming up on Just Plain Radio.
Just Plane Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
You are now clear for takeoff with Just Plane Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
Getting pretty good. Just trying to figure out these landings.
Increase altitude.
Increase altitude. It always says it. No, I'm trying to land.
Terrain alert.
I know there's terrain. I'm trying to land on the terrain.
Terrain alert. Pull up.
I will not. I am my own person.
Pull up. Terrain alert. Pull up. Terrain alert.
Damn it.
Landing unsuccessful.
Yeah, I saw you, freaking dog.
This is Just Plane Radio. Greg, your co-pilot. That's me, along with Captain Dennis. We're navigating the latest aviation news and information. Stories that matter for pilots and things that we just find mightily amusing, like this next one. So, guy's flying his plane. I don't know at what point in his flight plan this happened, but he ended up in a tree. Is that right, Dennis?
Yeah, it sounds like he had some sort of an emergency and wound up doing the right thing. I mean, when you're flying, I think this was at night, and he was out over the dark woods, and they say find the darkest spot and fly as slow as you can and fly it right into, you know, fly it into the stall. And he wound up 60 feet up in a pine tree with his Piper Cub.
How about that?
Well, so, you know, and the Cub doesn't fly very fast, right? You know, it can touch down probably 30 miles an hour. So the big, big pine tree apparently can absorb that kind of an impact. So, yeah, he crashed the airplane in, and it kind of wrapped itself around in the upper branches of the tree, and he's sitting there, okay, now what?
Right, now I got to get down, you know, which, you know, your first, feeling is like, oh my gosh, I made it, this is awesome, and then you realize, oh my gosh, I'm still 60 feet up off the ground.
Now I am going to die.
Yeah, which would really blow, wouldn't it? I mean, it's the same thing. If you're landing in, in a forest at the top of the trees, that's one option. You know, top of like finding a water source. I forget, you know, the trees are first, right? As far as an emergency landing option over a body of water, like a lake or something.
Or I don't know. In Minnesota, the lakes are hard most of the year, so it might make a better runway.
Well, right, well, true, but I forget which one. What order is it? Isn't it trees first and then? Water, I think, is like if you don't have any other option, like a road or something that you can clear power lines and land in an emergency scenario or an open field. Isn't it? I was thinking it was treetops first and then water, but I could have that reversed. You're the pilot. Come on.
I'm not certain. In my opinion, I think I would take the lake, you know, land close to shore and
that might
you know,
be.
At least
I don't
it's relatively smooth. Yeah, it's going to stop you quick and maybe flip you over. But
everyone's listening. They go, it's the trees, you idiot, or vice versa. But, you know, hey, look, I don't have my certificate yet, so cut me some slack. But we'll get the answer one way or another from all the hate mail.
But you know, can you imagine the embarrassment, though, of having to get your cell phone out? Hello, 911. What's your emergency?
Well, I'm alive. But I'm 60 feet off the ground and stuck in a tree in my airplane. Can you come help me out?
So they send the fire department not to rescue the cat, but the pilot.
Yeah. Interesting. So yeah. They go up there with the ladders or they scale the tree and they secure the plane to the tree and they get him down safely, which is great. But now what do they do with the airplane? Are they leaving it up there or what?
I don't know. I'd probably cut the tree down and take the plane with it. I don't know. But
the
important
leave
thing
it up
was
there.
To get the pilot out there. Yeah, leave it as a warning to other pilots. Don't
that would
do
be
this.
quite a conversation starter. Hey, you see that tree over there? I mean, you know, if you're in the islands, they'd leave it in the tree. Just they leave, you know, all the crash planes off the side of these little out island airports right off to the side of the runway. When you're landing... Well, in some of those islands, and you look off at the graveyard, so to speak, it's not very encouraging.
Well, what did we see at Bimini? There was at least a half a dozen, derelicts just sitting there. They'd stripped the engines off of them, or in one of them, the engine was sitting on the tarmac right in front of the plane.
Well, Bimini is actually a very popular area, but if you go to some of the real out islands in the Bahamas, for instance, that don't see much activity, on a regular basis, you will see airplanes off to the side of the runway, at the end of the runway, in the rocks. that they had went too far or landed too early, so to speak. You'll see some of the remnants of that kind of stuff. Like, hey, good thing we weren't that guy kind of stuff. You could look at those as signs of what not to do, maybe. Or it just adds to the whole character of the place. But, yeah, landing in a tree is one thing. And being rescued from it after... I just wonder if the guy was just ecstatic that he made it, or then it was kind of like, oh, no. Because that really would blow. Whether you landed in a tree or in the water and survived it, the last thing you would want to have to deal with is having to fight for your life once this happened. You know what I mean?
I just want to be able to walk away from the landing, tie the airplane down, and move on.
Right. But if you've made it through the crash part of the story, it would so suck to have to deal with the second part. And like, look, I made it through a frigging crash, for Christ's sake. Now I got to do this too? Come on! Cut me some slack. That would be worst case scenario for me. That would be way worse than the crash part. You know what I mean? You hear what I'm saying, Dennis?
Yeah, and that's, very true. And that's why, the people that fly in the northern territories of Canada and whatnot have got, survival gear and stuff with them, because they probably will survive the plane crash, but they won't survive the elements unless they're prepared.
Right. Yeah. Now, Dennis, you don't know this, but when we flew to Bimini, I asked you, do we have a crash kit, as you do? And you said we had a couple, life preservers and that kind of thing when we're flying over the water. We weren't going to be over the water as far as a dead zone very, very much at all. We could literally glide back to land one way or the other to and from the Bahamas or in Bimini and in South Florida. But I was thinking, I was like, okay, if we do happen to go down and we have to get these life preservers out and drift at sea, the question is next, like, how do we survive? What do we do? It's like, I really like Dennis, but if I get really, really hungry, am I going to have to eat him to survive?
Well, just remember, you don't have to swim faster than the sharks. You just have to swim faster than me, which isn't hard, right?
Well, yeah, but I'm going to have to use you as bait to get the sharks to catch, to eat, and survive for myself. You hear what I'm saying? I'm just telling
you. And now you know why I don't have any sharp knives in the plane.
Okay. Yeah, but all these kind of twisted thoughts,
No, I was thinking a lot of the same things, and so that's why I had my eyes out the window looking for, where are the pleasure boats and things like that, too, because, would probably make a lot more sense to go land near one of the big yachts, because they probably have food on board.
Well, true. Or they're chucking off some garbage that you could probably eat or something to survive, just to get by. But for what it's worth, you were safe. I had brought some, snack bars with me in my backpack. So I prepared. So I was like, I actually like Dennis too much. I don't want to have to eat him to survive. I got this little chocolate and peanut, breakfast bar that'll tie me over for.
We had the cooler in the back that had, sodas, water, and some lunch meat too. So we probably would have been okay.
But you got to think about this. Once you see those movies, what is it? Survival. They crash into
Alive.
Yes. Yeah, you see those movies, it makes you think, like, oh my gosh, yeah, you better make sure you have a good crash kit on board and proper, preparation to deal with the elements so you don't have to eat your friends to stay alive. I mean, you don't want to be in that scenario. That would kind of blow. What are you thinking right now? Dennis is just like being quiet.
I'm thinking this is the last time I take Greg to the Bimini.
Good point. No, once again, I came prepared. I brought my little snack.
We had a great time. We had nothing to worry about. Like you said, it was a very, very short window there. We would have gotten our feet wet. And we were actually having those discussions. So how would we land out here? Do you want the wheels down? Do you want them up? I think we both agreed you definitely would want to land on the ocean with the wheels up so that you have nothing catching, and land close to some other boat if you can see somebody around. And
I love the idea of your Mooney flying from Florida to Bimini and thinking that, yeah, leave the wheels up. And when we did have to glide down, say if we lost power, we literally would skip like a stone. Yep. All the way to Bimini, hopefully. That's what I figure. It probably would. It went a pretty long way like that.
You know, and if we do it right, you know, you got a new dive site.
True. There's that as well. But I don't know. Would that thing, if you kept it sealed up, well, no, it would leak right in.
I was going
to say. Yeah, it's not that sealed up.
You've been underneath it and seen, you know, there's a lot of inspection panels and whatnot in there. And, you know, what are the chances that it's going to stay 100% intact when you hit the water like that? You know, you might wind up cracking something and the water will get inside the tail cone and you're going to go down.
Yeah, it's either you get a float plane or you don't. You know, I guess that's something to consider. All right, well, we covered a lot of stuff in that segment that I didn't expect, but hey, you got to think these things through when you're planning to fly your airplanes, just in case, right? Autopilots. We're going to talk about those next with a company that might help out Dennis and his Mooney here in a few months. Stay close. Just Plane Radio.
Just Plane Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
Be an explorer in the other two-thirds of your world. Be the buddy who takes the kids in the aquarium instead of just to it. Be adventurous. Be amazed. Be a diver.
For nearly 75 years, the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association has been a beacon for those who cherish the freedom to fly. AOPA protects your rights as a pilot by fighting airspace restrictions, fuel taxes, user fees, airport closings, and other issues that threaten your ability to take to the sky. AOPA is on the front lines every day to ensure that general aviation and the interests of its members are promoted and safeguarded. Learn more about how you can become a member at AOPA.org.
Imagine traveling twice as fast as you can drive. Imagine taking friends and family snorkeling, surfing, skiing, shopping, and more to exotic destinations. Imagine attending business meetings in cities far away and still making it home at night. Or just imagine exploring the wild blue yonder.
Quit dreaming about it and get to it. There has never been a better time to become a private pilot, and flight training professionals in Orlando will show you how. Flight Training Professionals in Orlando is your full-service flight school. A state-of-the-art flight simulator, a fleet of the latest Cessna aircraft, and a staff of full-time seasoned flight instructors are just a few of the many reasons Flight Training Professionals in Orlando is the place to start your aviation adventure. Call 407-896-0077. That's 407-896-0077. Or go to ftpros.com. That's ftpros.com.
You are now clear for takeoff with Just Plane Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
They might tell you you're on a non-stop flight. Well, I don't think I care for that. No, I insist that my flight stop. Preferably at an airport. It's those sudden, unscheduled cornfield and housing development stops that seem to interrupt the flow of my day.
So fly with me. Yeah, fly with me. 30,000 in the skies, where you trying to be? I can take you to a place that is so exclusive. It's a view that only me, you, and the pilot see. As the clouds.
This is Just Plane Radio. Greg, your co-pilot. That's me along with Captain Dennis. And Dennis has a Mooney 201, as we've talked about extensively here on Just Plane Radio. And one of the things we found out is that he can't rely on me as his co-pilot. So he's looking to upgrade his autopilot, which brings us to Andrew from TrueTrack, who joins us on Just Plane Radio right now. Andrew, welcome to Just Plane Radio. How are you?
Thanks. I appreciate that. Doing very well.
All right. So this TrueTrack autopilot system, you guys have been doing this for years, I guess, or what, Andrew? Give us the backstory.
Yeah, you bet. Absolutely. TrueTrack's actually been in the autopilot business since the late 90s. 1999 is when the company was founded. we lived wholly in the experimental world there for quite a while, up until actually 2017. That's when we got our first autopilot certified, the Vision Autopilot, which we've been offering in the experimental world for actually many years. We got that certified in 2017, started with the Cessna 172s, and now we're kind of working through the single-engine aircraft that are out there. We've got actually 172s, 175s, 177s, 180, 182, 185, PA-28, and PA-32s currently approved. And we do have the Mooney in our facility right now working on that. So that's our next one that we're going to be adding to the AML.
Well, there you go. And I know Dennis is, he's jonesing for a new autopilot. What are you looking for? And how did you find these guys, Dennis?
Well, I've been following their path here for a while since they got the Vision certified as one of the first to transition from experimental to the certified world. And, you know, you start looking at the price point and it starts to make me ask questions. You know, with my airplane, it came with actually two different autopilots. I have an old Sentry that tracks the course, and I've got a STEC PSS that holds the altitude. So nothing's integrated. It is really rudimentary as far as being able to navigate. I don't have the ability to do GPS steering. So anytime you need to change a course, you've got to go down and mess with a heading bug and change your OBS settings. And, you know, and then if you have to work on the servo, you know, it costs almost as much to get a servo overhauled as I could buy a whole new system. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask Andrew, what's the benefits and what do I give up by going with a newer technology? Is there any limitations compared to what I have right now with the older Sentry autopilot?
So the only potential limitations you may have is that this is a newer technology autopilot. So I'll call it limitations, but it's an autopilot that's designed for the digital interfaces that mostly exist between avionics today. So like things like GPS steering, whereas in the past, a lot of aircraft would require a separate module to be able to integrate GPS steering in, because those autopilots are expecting analog inputs. This autopilot is expecting only digital inputs. So the one thing you might lose if you had an older analog style autopilot is you may lose the ability to follow VOR, localizer, ILS type signals. But we do GPS steering, so whatever you can program into your GPS, the autopilot can follow that as a GPS overlay, actually.
So we also considering have the ability that we
to apply a couple GPS approaches and things like that. But we don't do those analog approaches. That's really the only thing you'd be losing. Of course, you're gaining a whole lot of capability and a whole lot of safety with this autopilot as well.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask. You know, we did a large upgrade last year and got rid of the old legacy King radios and put in the brand new Avidyne 550s and 440s. So they're, you know, on all digital, all GPS based. You know, would it still be able to, you know, if I programmed an ILS approach into the Avidyne, would the TrueTrack be able to do any of the course guidance for that? Or would I really just be primarily relying on the RNAV type approaches, which will probably get me down to very similar altitudes in most cases?
As of today, yeah, it's those RNAV style approaches, although we are working really closely with Avidyne, and I would expect maybe some neat stuff to come out down the road here. But the Avidyne folks are spectacular to work with. We've got a couple of demo units from them that we use in a lot of our testing and verification as we release new versions of software. So there's a lot of really cool stuff that we can do as we work more and more closely with these avionics manufacturers. So yeah, as of today, I'll say it's a maybe on things like that. That's going to be kind of GPS specific as to whether you can do a GPS overlay of an analog approach or not. But you also have to remember that the en route portion of your guidance, yes, the autopilot will 100% follow all of that sort of stuff. What it really
boils
down to
is
that last 3 miles, we may or may not be able to fly coupled.
Well, and that's the part that, you know, when you're flying 7 hours down to Orlando to pick up Greg and then another 2 hours to the Bahamas, you know, being able to just set it and capture an altitude and sit back and enjoy the scenery and would be really kind of nice to rely on that autopilot.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll be really great for all of that sort of stuff. You've got your track selector that's built into the autopilot, so you don't need your external heading bug. But you know, generally you're probably on a flight plan in the GPS anyway. So the autopilot's just gonna stay zeroed up, centered on that course line with you doing whatever you need to do in the altitude side, programming that directly into the autopilot.
What about the install of a system like this? Is it pretty extensive or, you know, fairly easy way for your, you know, certified mechanic to make this happen or what, Andrew?
Yeah, actually, we work really hard on designing installations that are going to save the end user money in the end game. It's one thing to have an affordably priced product. You know, our Autopilot retails at $5,100, including the install kit, the wiring harness, the STC, all that sort of stuff. You got $5,100 in that. But if we didn't do a good job on our installation design, you could easily spend another $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 on installation. So we work really hard to minimize the amount of time required to do an install. Typically speaking, we're seeing aircraft that are flying away that haven't had an autopilot installed previously. Those aircraft will be fly away for probably in the $7,000 to $8,000 price range, pretty reasonably.
Well, you know, that's within Keith's credit card range there, Dennis. So I think we can make this happen, all right?
All right.
That's perfect.
TrueTrackAP.com. That's TrueTrackAP.com, the website. Andrew, thank you so much for being on Just Plane Radio. Appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks, guys. Appreciate the invite.
And that'll have to wrap it up for this week. Till next time, remember, there is no better high
than learning to fly.
Just Plane Radio is brought to you by JustPlaneRadio.com.
I say we take off and nuke the entire site from orbit.
Your aviation resource on the information super skyway.
It's the only way to be sure.
Just Plane Radio is a production of Overboard Entertainment Incorporated.
But just plain wrong.
Remember, you can listen live or to archives of past shows worldwide over the internet at JustPlaneRadio.com.
I'm going to lead my people up to the radio tower.
So tell a friend and take off every week with Just Plane Radio.
And I'm going to make a call.
The show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
Listen up, everybody. I have some news.
The opinions you just heard on Just Plane Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests.
We are screwed.
They are not necessarily those of any station or network, its management, or advertisers.
A little too far. Cross the line.
There are many factors to consider before learning to fly.
What is your problem?
So make sure you do your own research and get the proper instruction before your exploration into aviation.
Thank you very much, sir.
Have any questions or comments? Feel free to do so via the web at JustPlaneRadio.com.